Hello, SestraCast listeners. Before we get started with today's show, we wanted to let you know that March is Incomparable Membership Month. Hooray! But what does that mean exactly? You can support your favorite shows like this one you're listening to, as well as all of the others in the Incomparable Network, with a donation of $5, $10, or $20. And not only do you get to sleep well with all of the, you know, good support you've provided to the Incomparable people, but you also get access to some members-only podcasts, the fantastic bootleg podcast feed, which if you don't listen to the game show, you need to listen to the game show because that makes the best use of the bootleg feed. You'll also get access to the video feed for Total Party Kill. And a members-only Slack community. So if you are interested, make sure you go to theincomparable.com/members and sign up for any of the options there. We would so appreciate it.
We really would. It really makes the network go to know that we have committed listeners who enjoy our work and help support it. There's a couple of cool SestraCast member-only perks that we are working on for you this month. One of them we're going to keep a secret and will likely be available at the end of March. But we are also going to start a channel in the members-only Slack for SestraCast that will include Orphan Black spoilers. So as you know, our podcast is spoiler-free. If you have watched nothing but up to the episode you're listening to, we won't spoil the rest of the show for you, future seasons and future episodes. But we know a lot of you have watched Orphan Black, the complete 5 seasons. You probably have watched it multiple times, like me. And you might want to come into the Slack and discuss what's happened on Orphan Black this week and how it compares to the season finale or anything like that. So I will be in that channel on the Incomparable member Slack to discuss those exciting questions with you. Kathy will not be until she finishes the whole show.
Right. And then I will enjoy looking back and reading everything that has been posted. And so once we get to that point, be ready for some threads in the Slack channel where I freak out and go, yes, I agree, et cetera, et cetera.
Yes, it'll be months later, but you'll get a notification. Kathy loves your post.
Yes.
And that's cool because none of this has to be, you know, everybody watching everything and reading everything at the same time because it's the internet and it will be there for you when you're ready for it, Kathy.
Exactly.
So that's theincomparable.com/members. Go ahead and sign up. Choose SestraCast as one of your favorite podcasts if you wish your support to go to SestraCast, or you can divide it up, I believe, between multiple podcasts. I'm sure there's a limit, you know, at some point. There's so many podcasts on The Incomparable. If you haven't checked it out, you really should. My personal favorite still is Random Trek. I'm a Star Trek person, so I highly recommend Star Trek people check that out. But there's all sorts of cool stuff.
I am also a fan of my other podcast that I do, which is called Friends in Your Ears. It's where I talk to 2 podcasters, some from the Incomparable Network, but not all, and talk to them about their favorite podcast. So if you like listening to a bunch of podcasters geek out about podcasts, then this is the show for you. So make sure you check out the membership options and on with the show.
Thanks for listening. Welcome to SestraCast, the Orphan Black podcast. I'm Jean McDonald, and I'm here with my lovely co-host, Kathy Campbell. Hey, Kathy, how's it going?
Hi, Jean. It's going pretty good.
Pretty good.
Let's take this episode, which was, like we were saying earlier, it's not like a major, oh my goodness, type of episode, but it's so full. It's so busy. It's really just like, bam, it's there. And it has enough information to, like, answer some questions. Mm-hmm. But, of course, there's always more questions that come out. So it's always interesting.
It raises a lot of questions as well. And
so many questions.
It's yeah, so it's season 2, episode 8, which is titled Variable and Full of Perturbation. No, Perturbation. Yes, that's right. I practiced this.
It's one of those weird words, for sure.
It's not a word I would ever use in writing, or I would just say variable and perturbing. It is perturbing.
Yes.
And it is variable. So good job with that title, producers of Orphan Black.
Yes.
There's no Helena in this episode, but there's a new clone. It's not every episode you get a new clone. And we will get to that clone when we have worked out, we think, a plan of attack for this very chopped up, switching around a lot episode where they switch scenes just to have one line being read and then switch somewhere else for another line.
It's like the pogo stick episode is what I think we'll call it.
The pogo stick episode. Which one is that?
Bouncy, 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 bouncy. Yes. No, yes. It's just this episode is on a pogo stick.
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
Bounces around. See, I'm funny.
You are funny. And I'm tired. And I've had 3 cups of coffee and I was like, wait, I forgot there was a pogo stick in Orphan Black. So thank you, Kathy, for being more on it and being able to make jokes. And I will just be the straight person here and try to keep us on track for an episode of SestraCast that is not 3 hours long, because we could do that pretty much with any episode.
Oh, easily.
Yeah. But this one has great Allison and Donnie material, and I think we'll start with that. So when we last saw Allison and Donnie, Allison was chewing him out.
Or at least Donnie.
At the rehab for having been her monitor and not even realizing what he was doing, and saying, you know, you've ruined our family and you're too stupid to even know why. That was a great scene. And we saw Donnie get quite steely-eyed and angry at what turned out to be Dr. Leakey. He tracked him down and then he accidentally shot his head off. And that was gross but satisfying, because if anybody on the show deserved a messy end, it was that guy, Dr. Leakey.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So now, apparently, Donnie went home. So they don't show this part in between, but he's in bed and he's under the covers. And Allison apparently has been released from rehab, and she comes in the bedroom like, why didn't you pick me up? What's the matter with you? And he's like, I don't feel well. And she says, what is going on here? There's all sorts of cleaning fluid in the laundry and you're not up and the kids haven't been taken to school. And then she's sniffing around and realizes she smells alcohol, and she pulls the covers off Donnie and he has all the mini bottles in bed with him.
All the mini bottles that she had left, I'm sure. Yeah. He's so proud. I mean, not really proud, but he talks about how he has found all of her. He knows all of her hiding spots for the alcohol and the pills, and is not afraid to say, like, he goes and takes it, basically.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, he owns it, which is fine.
Yeah.
That's fine. And of course, Allison doesn't know why, and thinks it's because she got so angry at him / finds out that they're clones and like all of this information, when really I think that's the last thought in his mind. I think really it's the fact that he shot somebody. That's probably like the highest.
It was a big mess. It was clearly a big mess, and apparently he has tried to clean it up. We don't know yet exactly how ineffective he's been at that. But yeah, that's right. She does say to him, like, I know it's hard, you know, finding out your wife is a clone. See, I can use the C word, too. So nobody has called it the C word in a while.
I know. I laughed at that.
Yeah. So when she starts pounding him with the pillow and chewing him out for, you know, not supporting her and her recovery and not taking care of things he's supposed to take care of. And the kids, of course, their little heads pop in the door and she's like, whoops, says, Daddy isn't feeling very well. I'm taking you to school, and then you're going to spend the night at Grandma's until Daddy feels better. And she looks at Donnie and she says, you take this day. And, you know, how does she say it? You take this day to think about what you've done. So
it was very funny because we know what's keeping her, yes, what's keeping him down.
Yes.
And that just makes it funnier.
Right, right. So they next appear. Donnie is apparently packing up to leave town, and Allison comes downstairs and finds him, and it's a very moving scene. It really got my heart, like, got all warmed up when Allison says, like, no, you know, we are not there yet. We have a whole mountain to climb. We, yes, aren't even at base camp yet. It's like, oh, it just gives me chills now, because it's Allison the rock. Allison, the one who is, yes, the mom and the family, you know, the rock of the family, is saying, like, no, you know, you may be a loser six ways to Sunday, but you're still my husband, right? And then she says, don't you even love me anymore? And, oh.
And then, did you ever love me? Because, again, she still thinks this is about the clone part.
Right.
Oh,
right.
And is so like, she said, here's this man that she has raised a family with and has loved for years, and all of this stuff goes down, and she's wondering if it was all a lie and what exactly is going on. And I loved how she went from so angry to sad, almost like flipping a switch, very similar to how Donnie went from sad to angry, mm-hmm, at the end of the last episode, mm-hmm, or, well, not the end of it, but when they were in the rehab center, it tore at my heartstrings. I felt so bad.
Yeah.
So bad.
Yeah. And Donnie just grabs her. He, like, throws himself on her lap and is crying, and she's, yeah, comforting him, and he's saying, of course, you know, I love you, and I've screwed everything up, and I have done terrible things. And she says, oh, I've done terrible things. And he's like, no, not like this. And she says, you should try me. And it's like, neither one knows, yeah, the other's deep, dark secret. But clearly, that's, Kat's going to be,
it's coming,
let out of the bag. He's apologizing. Donnie says, I'm, yeah, sorry about the porn. I'm sorry about putting you in rehab. I'm sorry for hating your mother. And Allison's like, everyone hates my mother.
I love that. Yeah. That they're coming back together, you know. They really do love each other.
Yeah.
And it's very sweet. They're very adorable together once they get to this next step,
right,
where Allison confesses about Ainsley. Mm-hmm. And, like, she whispers in his ear, and his face just completely, yes, changes.
It's a great face.
Oh my gosh, it was so great. And she sits back and is like, please don't think I'm horrible.
Right.
And he just goes, I killed Dr. Leakey. Yeah. It's just like.
And then it's her turn.
Not even any buildup or anything. Like, yeah, just lays it out there. And, yeah, and her, yeah, her reaction. And it was so funny.
Yeah.
It was very nice.
Yeah. So, of course, the next logical step is to go check out the car in the garage where Donnie has stored Dr. Leakey's body.
Which, obviously, he's never watched any sort of crime show.
No.
Or anything, because we learn that not only is Dr. Leakey poorly stored in the trunk of the car, but he cleaned off the gut and put it back,
right,
in the safe. And, you know,
right,
Allison's face when she's like, okay, you know, we'll clean this up, I'll rewrap it, blah, 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 yeah, blah. And then finds out that she used his gun, and that's what makes her angry.
Yes.
It was so very Allison, because of course she knows, like, this can be traced,
right,
if they find the body, and they, like, all of these things can go into place, and they know that her gun would be registered to her and mm-hmm. like all of these things. And
right.
she's very obviously the smartest one in the relationship.
It wasn't even a Ramon gun, you know, like it wasn't like a shady piece. Right. It was one of her registered guns that were from her safe. So that made her the maddest. It's yes. true. But I did love how the scene, how it's shot and how it starts off, because the camera angle is from the trunk. So the camera is looking up at Donnie and Allison looking in the trunk, and, you know, it's quite gross. And Allison is picking up the, you know, the plastic drop cloth or whatever that the body was in. And she says, "This is not at all well wrapped." It's like, of course, it starts off with an yes. Allison, you know, crafty moment. Like, I would have done a much better job of this. And now I'm going to.
So very Allison.
I'm going to reline the trunk and we are going to take care of it. And so... that's all we get to see of what happens in this episode, but I'm pretty sure they will revisit this Allison and Donnie hiding the evidence situation in future episodes.
Oh, I'm sure. So many hijinks to come across.
Well, shall we talk about the new clone?
Yes.
The new guy.
So we get introduced to the new clone in the opening bit.
Yeah.
We see this van come screeching into a garage, and the minute I see a person with like a bandana tied around the lower part of their face, I was like, "Oh, look, we have another clone."
Yeah.
Like, that's pretty much, especially when you hear the voice, it's like, "Oh, okay, this is another clone." And someone's been shot and all of these things. And then there's a story about how a cop called and wanted information. And I'm thinking, oh, no, it's got to be something about, like, you know, Dyad is after them. Or somehow they got the cop. Didn't even think about Beth. Like, did not even, like, Beth did not show up in my brain at all. Because that was, you know, season one information.
Yeah.
It's not going to be in season two. But he's like, you got to find that cop. Find Beth Childs. And you, like, you find out that this clone has a beard.
Yeah.
And is masculine. And I was just like, huh. Did not see that coming whatsoever. I'm very excited. Like, it was... such an interesting way to add a new character that was not what you were expecting.
Right.
And I just really, yeah. And then I'll wait for my thoughts on him with Felix.
Yeah, because when we get to that
those
point.
Two.
Yeah.
Yeah, when we get to that point.
Yeah, so we see Art meeting the new person, the new guy. I mean, that's what we call him now. Yes. And, He comes up to a car and he sees this clone who's clearly masculine, and he's like, "You're Tony?" And Tony says, "No, I'm Harry freaking Potter." That's the whole scene. But it's meant to like show.
Right. Another jump cut.
Yeah, Tony is not Tony has enough attitude to fill the whole show up, which he does.
Not like we've seen attitude like this in anyone else. In any of the other clones at all. They're all so, you know, well behaved and not sarcastic at all and kind to everyone they meet.
Right. And so, yeah, so we next see Art. Oh, well, actually, there's a really cute moment where Felix has been helping Sarah out with Kira, but he says, "I've got to go. I told Art I'm going to help him with something cloney." So,
yes.
Cloney, it's an adjective.
I really enjoyed that line.
And so Felix is in his apartment. Art brings Tony over there. And Felix, didn't know what to expect either and is kind of bowled over. In fact, this episode probably has the most, like, bowled over and dumbfounded faces per second of of any yes. episode we've watched so far. There's so many reveals.
Which says a lot, because there's been so many like clone reveals, mm-hmm. but the fact that there's a clone that is male mm-hmm. definitely has surprised everyone, including Felix, who's pretty unsurprisable.
Yes.
Like, he's pretty much seen it all, right. you know, and once he got over the whole clone part, he's just kind of like, we'll take whatever comes at him, except for in this case, yes. especially in his house.
Yeah. And he says, listen, I got to talk to Arthur for 30 seconds and then I'll be right back. And he goes out into the hallway and looks at Art and says, holy Tilda Swinton. And that's a famous Felix line. Holy Tilda Swinton.
That's awesome.
And Art says something about, you know, well, so she's one of the clones, and Felix corrects his pronoun right away, which was a right. good, you know, moment in the show, a teaching moment where Felix
says, yeah, smart writing.
Felix says, like, he's a clone. Yes, he is. And Art, you know, goes with that from that moment on. And so Felix goes in there back into the apartment because they don't know if Tony knows that he's a clone. So Felix goes in and says, gives him the little clone riddle, the just one, I'm a few, no family two, who am I? And Tony looks at Felix and says, yeah, pretty gay by the looks of this place. So Clony. I just called him Clony. Tony, the clone.
You did call him.
does not, apparently, he doesn't recognize the little riddle, the, you know, which is their secret handshake, clone's secret handshake. And so
yeah,
we're to assume that he doesn't know he's a clone, but Felix doesn't want to tell him yet because it's hard to explain. He wants Sarah to come and then, you know, it'll be clear what's going on.
Well, and also, like, Felix has never had to be the one to, like, explain this.
Yeah.
But also, they don't know how much he knows, because of course Tony got in touch with Art by messaging Beth. Mm-hmm. And so there's this whole other person. Obviously they can't ask Beth what's going on or how much Sammy, the guy that got shot, knew, mm-hmm. like any of that information. So they're trying to very carefully figure out what Tony knows, but additionally what the message for Beth is. They don't want to give away their hand, so they're not going to say, hey, Beth's dead, tell me, mm-hmm. just yet. Mm-hmm. But they also, Rachel's a clone who is on, quote unquote, the other side. So, like, they have had experience with a clone that is not necessarily on their side, so they've definitely become more careful with how they react to things.
Yeah.
And so they need to make sure, not just for their own sanity, because they don't want to have to be the person that tells someone, hey, by the way, you thought you were normal. You're a clone. Right. Like, especially in someone that's trans who obviously has had some self.
Yeah, but somebody who has had already to deal with recognizing there's something other than how they were identified at birth. And
yes, yes,
we all assume we're unique when we're born. I mean, except for twins maybe, but you know, we don't assume we're clones. That's not one right. of the options that generally
that's very much not something that will come into our thought process mm-hmm. when you're growing up is, oh, I wonder if I'm a clone.
Yeah
that's not gonna be a thing,
you know. So it's kind of the Felix and Tony show for the next, you know, bit, while Art is researching, you know, what he can find out about Tony, and Felix is trying to get Sarah to come over. Tony wants to borrow Felix's clothes, and Felix, I like this Felix in this show because he's very much the one, he's very mature in saying things like, I know your game,
yes.
you know, you push buttons. And when Tony tries to get under his skin, Felix says, "You have a lot in common with my sister." Things like that.
Yes. And he's seeing so many similar personality traits in Tony. And it really, I agree. He's treating this all as the adult of the situation, mm-hmm. Which is very surprising. I like him as, I love Felix in everything. Don't get me wrong, mm-hmm. but I like the difference in his character in this episode.
Yeah.
It's very different and it's really interesting.
So at one point, Felix, makes an excuse to go out and meet Art. And that exactly when Felix leaves the apartment, Tony, who's pretending he's like, "Oh, I'm in the bath and I'm just hanging out here," you know, gets immediately up and starts searching through Felix's stuff and trying who knows what. But
finding things to steal, basically, is what I'm imagining.
Yeah, finding things to steal. Yeah, that's true. But also more information because he's a canny thinker about the whole situation. He just pretends that he's not. Yeah. But he comes across Felix's paintings of the other clones, and that freaks him out because now he's seen the face. It's undeniable that something very weird from Tony's perspective is going on, and he can't understand it.
Yeah.
But so Felix finally does talk to Sarah, and there's music. Felix has gotten alcohol so that, you know, he can loosen Tony up and hopefully get the message, because Tony will not give them the message from his buddy Sam until he is told what's going on. And Felix doesn't want to tell him what's going on for all the reasons that you were explaining. So there's music, loud music, there's drinking, Tony is dancing, and Felix is on the phone with Sarah and says, "I'm dealing with a naive clone." And it's a he. And Sarah's like, "Oh, it must be a different batch." And he's like, "Nope, it's definitely your batch."
It's definitely yours. Yeah. I was like, that said so much. And not just because of how similar they look, mm-hmm. but very much the personality types.
Yes, definitely your batch.
This is very Sarah.
So Sarah agrees to come over, and that's when Tony is trying to, you know, push Felix's buttons the whole time and actually comes on to him and starts kissing him. And Felix is like, "Nope, not doing that." And that's when Tony says, "Hey, what about the painting? It has my face. You tell me why you have this, or I'm leaving." And Felix is trying to keep Tony from leaving, because if he leaves, they'll never see him again. And he won't be able to, you know, Sarah's on her way. So he does go out the door. Tony goes out the door. And of course, he bumps into Sarah. And you have one of these beautiful, like, oh my God, looks from both of them. Again, that look in the hallway.
Right.
And that, of course, keeps him from leaving, because he knows that he is a clone. And the cutest line there was Sarah, you know, is talking about the whole clone thing and Cosima and how she found out. And Tony says, "Yeah, shut your yap for a second." And he's just walking around looking at her, and then goes like, "Look at us, we're hot." And Sarah looks at Felix and says, "Well, not our usual identity crisis. And I guess he's the new guy." And so finally they get to get the message, which Tony gives them verbatim what his pal Sammy said to him, which is, "Tell Beth to keep the faith. Paul's like me, he's on it. He's a ghost." And that's like, So that was Tony's monitor, and Tony's monitor knew Beth's monitor, who became fake Beth, Sarah's monitor as well. Right?
Right. And we also learned that Sammy was ex-military, which is more likely than not how they know each other.
Right. Right.
Especially with what we know of Paul's history.
Yeah.
And it definitely makes them question. I mean, they're now like, okay, now what do we do? Because, of course, they know that Paul, like, it makes them wonder, and it makes me wonder how much communication Sammy had with them. Had with Paul, because we know that he's been helping out Rachel.
Right.
But in a future episode, or in a future, in a different scene, we learn that Rachel can't find Paul either. So it really, like, it all ties in together. It's like, okay, is he really on the side of the clones?
Right.
You know, and we've seen, I mean, we've seen him interacting with Mrs. S and all of that stuff. So it's really just like, let's add some more information to this pot. Like, let's just stir it around and find out what else we can add that confuses the entire, like, who's on whose side and what's going on, what's happening.
Right. No, that's true. So, yeah, so then Felix, you know, saying goodbye to Tony, he gives him a clone phone. So, and says, here's, you know, Art's number, Sarah's number, my number, call us. Because they find out from Art that the police have found Tony's car, and that, you know, that Tony, all along, they're saying he's in danger. If he hangs around, he has to go to ground, you know, into hiding. Because if they were after Sam, me, they are after Tony as well. And so Tony takes his clone phone, he kisses Felix, surprises him with one more kiss, and then he just says, later, sister kisser.
Well, and before that, too, I love how he said, you're the very best of us, to Felix. And Felix goes, I know.
Oh, yeah. Sarah said that. Yeah.
And I'm just like, ah.
That's right. That was a very nice, there's a nice brother-sister vibe in the show, for sure. A lot of good Felix and Sarah. Yeah. Moments. And so that's the Tony, the new clone. And I will say, he's not my favorite clone, not because he's trans, but just because it felt like not quite all there, you know, that the character was
not a well-rounded character.
And they apparently, you know, they had to do his hair long because they couldn't do a wig with Tatiana's hair was needed in other clone incarnations. So she couldn't cut her hair or have, you know, do too much. They couldn't do too much with her look like they might have if they had full, you know, flexibility with the hair. And then the makeup side of it. So I feel like because they couldn't do the hair, they overdid it on the facial hair. And that just looked weird.
It was very odd. Like, it wasn't very well done, almost.
Yeah. And I mean, the one thing you can't really criticize, which, you know, would be a normally reasonable criticism, that using a cisgender actor to play a trans character, but they can only be played by Tatiana. the character is a clone, and Tatiana is the clone. So so that part I wouldn't, you know, I think that criticism, you know, could be put aside. But it would have been nice, and I think people felt this at the time when the character first appeared, to feel like the other characters are so strong, every one of them, you know, and this character just doesn't come up to that level.
It almost felt kind of thrown together.
Yeah, it did a bit. But I still like him saying sister kisser to Felix. That was funny. I laughed at that regardless.
Well, and I like the sass, especially since lately we've been missing out on some of the Sarah sass. Someone needed to, like, bring the sass
back. That's true. Yeah, he's very much like Sarah was in the beginning of the show, in the beginning of season one, before she had all the responsibility on her shoulders. And even Felix says to Tony specifically, we are going to keep you out of this, so you don't have to worry.
Yeah, and it really, it added some levity to the season. Yeah. We've had some pretty serious stuff going on.
Right.
I mean, it's Orphan Black, of course, but like, it was nice to almost have a breather without making it feel very out of the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's true. Maybe, you know, if you look at it from that point of view, that feels more coherent. So meantime, Sarah's not much in this episode. She sort of pops into a few scenes. At Mrs. S's house, she's there to say she doesn't trust Delphine and Rachel, and she's leery of giving them Ethan Duncan because she doesn't trust them. But Mrs. S says, hey, what did we get Duncan for except to leverage him? You know, we need to consider that.
Additionally, she doesn't trust Duncan very much when it comes to Kira.
Right.
Because Kira is always her top priority, pretty much.
Right.
And there's a couple moments sprinkled throughout where, Ethan Duncan is asking questions about Kira.
Mm-hmm.
And Sarah's just like, that's none of your business. And just kind of like takes ownership of Kira. And partially, I think a big part of it is because Ethan Duncan is the reason she's here.
Mm-hmm.
It's the reason her life is completely changed and still doesn't quite believe that he cares about them as people.
Right.
And I think partially because Sarah did not see the reunion that Rachel had.
Right.
With him.
Right. That's true.
And so there's a couple different layers there, but additionally, like, Sarah doesn't trust anybody that she doesn't have to until they've proved themselves. And he hasn't proven himself.
Right.
He hasn't shown that he's there to do what they need and for the good of the clones. Mm-hmm. Like, he's just there. And so when presented with this option of, hey, let's save Cosima without having to mess with Kira. Mm-hmm. She's kind of for it, but also still very concerned.
Because
The whole situation, she doesn't have major control of, and that makes her frustrated.
Right. Right. That's exactly right. And I figured there'd be like some moments that were warming your heart right from the beginning where Kira and Felix, you know, come into Mrs. S's house, and Mrs. S, she says, Kira yes. says, Mrs. S, and Mrs. S says, oh, you're a sight for sore eyes, and they're all huggy, and then Felix is there saying, like, hey, what about me? Aren't you happy to see me, too? And she hugs him, too, so.
It was so cute. Yeah,
so you got the family, you know, has been split up for a while. Kira's been off. You know, when she initially went off with Mrs. S, and then Sarah took her.
Cal.
And then Sarah handed her off to Cal. So now she's back home. And there's another moment. I thought, oh, I bet that pulled at Kathy's heartstrings. Sarah and Kira are upstairs doing arts and crafts and making an angel, mobile out of angels. And she's like, oh, we really need Auntie Allison here to help us with this, which was cute. And then Kira says, it reminds me of Helena, which was sweet.
It was so sweet.
But then there's like a knock on the door and Kira looks up and says, should we hide? You know, and it was like, oh,
right.
Poor Kira. She, you know, that's.
It's so sad that she has to think about this.
I like that she thinks on her feet like that, but she's so young to be having that kind of skill.
Right. Those concerns.
Sarah is convinced, and it's because of Cosima, you know, to give Dr. Duncan to Dyad, because, as you say, the other option is less palatable, which is using Kira's stem cells, because she only has so many teeth, and even bone marrow is not a, not a thing you want to put a child through, or anyone, if you don't have to. So I think that really brings us up to, but there's one last thing that happens at Mrs. S's house that is both funny and important, where Dr. Duncan is sitting with Kira, and he's reading to her for The Island of Dr. Moreau, which is a very famous novel by H.G. Wells. And he's reading this one particular line, or he's up to this one particular line, saying, "You cannot imagine the strange, colorless delight of these intellectual desires. The thing standing before you is no longer an animal or a fellow creature, but a problem," which is exactly how Duncan has been behaving even now, that he's having a hard time relating to people as people. And Sarah comes by, and she's hearing this, and she goes, "Is this really appropriate?" You know, and right at that moment, Kira just throws her head back like, "Oh, Mom." She doesn't say, "Oh, Mom," but it's that,
Mom.
Like, I'm old enough to read Dr. Moreau. And it's time for Duncan to go to Dyad, and he hands Kira the book. And he's giving the book to her, and he says, "Don't worry, I'm nobody's pawn." So that was really cute. And now Kira has a copy of The Island of Dr. Moreau, which I never read the book, but when I was a kid, I don't know why, but I was always watching these like weekend creature feature type movies on the four channels that we had. We didn't have many options, you know, of things to watch is probably how I got into it. But of course, fascination got the better of me. And I remember seeing The Island of Dr. Moreau, like the 1930s version, which is called The Island of Lost Souls, but it's the Island of Dr. Moreau. And those costumes, for anybody who hasn't read it, I mean, it's about a crazy scientist who conducts experiments on an island. So there is an island, there is a Dr. Moreau, and he tries to create human animal hybrids with varying degrees of success and all degrees of creepy. And in black and white, it's very creepy. And I remember as a kid being like, "Ooh," you know, that face of something that has like human eyes, but, you know, a lion or a panther's face. And I do not think it is entirely appropriate for an 8-year-old girl, you know, in retrospect. Yeah.
I don't know if I would read that to my daughter. However, it definitely has a point and purpose to the story, and is very, very plot solid.
There's a reason, and they've been foreshadowing this the whole time. Every time he's holding a book, it's The Island of Dr. Moreau, and the fact that he was actually reading it and then giving it to Kira, we made note of that, and we will see how that comes to play out. But I think we can talk about Rachel now, bring her bit into it, because she, well, as you said before, the first time we see her in this episode, she is wondering, where is Paul? And she leaves a voicemail for Paul that's just pure Rachel.
Yes.
She says, "Your absence is inconvenient and your silence is irksome." I would like to use that line on some people.
So Rachel.
And that's also the scene where Delphine comes and says, like, "Where's Dr. Leakey?" And Rachel says, "Well, he had a heart attack on one of our, you know, company jets. And now you're going to be reporting to me." but we may have a breakthrough, meaning we might get Ethan Duncan in here to help us unlock the synthetic sequence of the DNA that will cure Cosima and other clones who have this problem, have the same condition. So Ethan Duncan comes and, you know, to the office, and Rachel, who, when she met Duncan for the first time after 20 years, had been very emotional, is now as cold as ice and says, "I apologize for being emotional before, and it's not going to be the basis of our relationship. We need to keep this professional." And, right. I think, she went back to regular Rachel.
Her safe mode.
Her safe mode, right. Then, so they're talking about what Duncan will be doing. But finally, Rachel gets to ask him the question that's been burning her up, really, since she's found out about Sarah and Kira, which is, why Sarah, why of all of us, you know, why was the unmonitored tramp successful? So just to give you a little insight into Rachel's scientific detachment from all this, the unmonitored tramp, of course, is a very technical term for her clone sister who has a child. And Duncan, you know, his eyes get big and he says, "You mean in her fertility? Well, that's a failure, not a success, because you're all barren by design." And then unleashes like this interesting sequence of shots, because there's still Rachel being cold and detached, talking to Duncan, saying like, "Well, of course, that makes sense. You couldn't really have clones that reproduced." But they're at the same time showing us the scene as soon as Duncan is out of the office, we assume, where Rachel is mad as hell and just smashing everything she can smash in her office.
She's furious and heartbroken, and all of these things are right on her face as she destroys the office. Mm-hmm. The emotions that she had with seeing her daddy mm-hmm. again pretty much got wiped out completely by the fact that he purposefully made it so that she could not reproduce. And obviously it was for all of the clones, not mm-hmm. just really her, but that knowledge, I think, really not necessarily ruined the information, mm-hmm. Like not the relationship, but it definitely is making her second guess her father, basically.
Yeah. And also, I mean, all along, Rachel has been the pro clone. I mean, she wouldn't call herself that, but that's how she sees herself, as the clone who is in charge of the cloning experiment.
Right.
And that gives her a kind of status above the other clones. Yet this information just reinforces the fact that she's no different from the other clones. You know, she's just another one of them.
Right.
And that messes with her own, you know, self-identity. And, you know, throughout, I think this episode has, you know, a lot of references to motherhood and all its variations. And this is one aspect of it that, you know, not being able to have children when she apparently would want to, you know, is something that she you know, just finds devastating. And, you know, compared to Mrs. S, you know, who's the super mom, you know, who's a foster mother, and Allison, super mom, also, you know, adoptive mother. But then there's always this Kira, who is that like kind of jewel they all rotate around, and that they all wish they could have something like what Sarah has with Kira.
Yeah, they all have pretty much made some mention mm-hmm. of it. basically. A small amount of, not necessarily guilt, mm-hmm. but envy for sure. And surprisingly, it makes them all protective about her, right. too. Because even Rachel has shown that she's protective yes. of Kira by giving this opportunity to have Ethan Duncan do his work instead of just mm-hmm. insisting that they mm-hmm. just use Kira.
So I think we can turn to Cosima at this point, because that's the moment. So Delphine comes to take Dr. Duncan down to meet Cosima, and there's been some funny stuff happening with Cosima's lab, yeah. like hysterical. The first scene, Delphine is locked out of the lab because Cosima is still pissed off about not being told that the stem cells that they were implanting were from Kira. And so she's changed the code on the door, and Delphine is like, "You're locking me out." And she's like, "Yeah, I don't want to see you anymore." And there's Scott in the background who's like, "Wow, girl fights are mean."
I love Scott in this whole episode, but also his ability to be a good mm-hmm. third wheel, mm-hmm. basically. Like being able to be there and really just be like, "I'm just gonna say it how it yeah. is," and it was. Yeah, it was really funny.
Yeah, he is funny. And Delphine dropped off a package from Sarah, which contains Kira's tooth, the one she pulled out herself in the last episode. And they show a lot of close-up laboratory work on that tooth, including drilling. And it yes. was a little difficult for me. As you know, I just had this tooth extracted. And I said, "I told you, this is why yes. I felt like I could be at the Dyad Institute when I was having all that work done." Scott looks at the tooth and he realizes the donor is a child. And he says, "You realize it's a more obvious and effective way to treat 324B21. So that's the clone's designation, is getting the kid's bone marrow. And that's what we're aware of in this whole discussion of whether to take Ethan Duncan to the Dyad Institute. And, then there's a great scene where Cosima comes into the lab and there's this major tabletop game going on and three guys are there. And didn't you love that?
Oh, it was so funny, because Cosima's just like, "Yeah, okay." She's just like, "Whatever, it's fine. Don't mess with me, you know." And they get into an argument about rules.
Right.
And Cosima just steps in and is like, "Dude, no, you want to do this and you can't do that." And like, right. Oh my gosh, it was so great. It was so great.
"Do you want to play?" So yeah, it's Scott has introduced his Rune Wars, is the name of the game. I haven't played it, but I know that one of the producers is a real fan of it. And it's Doomsday, Painmaker, and You Wish 97. They're my sworn enemies. Like, so everybody's got their handles. And they're like, after she explains these rules to them, they're like, "Hey, you want to play?" And she's like, "I don't know if you're ready for that." But she does play.
She just owned it. Of course.
But then Delphine comes in and she has to talk to her about, you know, what's going to happen with Ethan Duncan. And Cosima says, "You know, I'm going to keep my promise to you from season one," which she didn't say that, but from when they first met, she says, "One day I'm going to get you baked." Because season one, Cosima was, you know, often getting high, smoking pot. And
yeah.
So now she wants to get, she turns around and says to those guys, "Battle bitches, can you pick up your beast men and beat it?" So she kicks them out of the lab. So then, yeah, there's Delphine and Cosima getting high and doing that helium thing, which I think is a really weird thing to do. I've never done it. I'm actually a little afraid. I don't think I would. Have you ever done it? You've done the squeaky helium voice thing? Really?
Oh, yeah.
It's safe,
yeah.
I guess.
Done it a couple times. I've never smoked pot, but I've done the helium voice.
Well, yeah, so they're doing that, and there's a kind of a montage of them being super silly and high.
And again, using the really soft, floaty, yes, romantic camera work again, which seems to be a reoccurring, yeah, theme. Yes.
Yeah, because Delphine says, you know, is the helium voice done? Because I have something important to tell you. It's like, I don't want to hear a squeaky response. And then she says, je t'aime, which, of course, is French for I love you. And Cosima says, well, you have to love all of us.
Right.
And Fiend says, then I love all of you. And Cosima says, good, because if you'd betray us again, I have enough dirt on you to end your career. Oh, and I love you too.
Very Cosima reply.
Yeah. And a very sweet, you know, sweet scene from a relationship that we just love to see the two of them together.
Yes.
At the next point in the lab is, so Cosima knows that Ethan Duncan is coming down to the lab. Delphine's gone to get him. She's really nervous about meeting him, and she's giving Scott a hard time for having a stained lab jacket and makes him put on a clean one. And she's just, you know, she's like, you know, everything has to be perfect. It's not exactly her hero, but, you know, somebody, you know, who is obviously a master of the field that she's in, not to mention the creator of her clone, you know, batch, the batch of clones.
Right.
And Scott says, you know, well, I assume he's here to help us with 324 B21. And that's when Cosima lets him in on the what's going on and says, Scott, it's me. I'm 324 B21. And another moment in this episode where somebody's like, you're what?
It blows his mind. And Cosima goes, do you need me to beam you up, Scotty? Which I thought it was really, yeah, cute. I thought was really sweet.
It was sweet. And Scott, you know, he pulls it together and he's like, I'm honored. And I almost expect him to go, now can I see one? Can I see another one? Because so he has not met any of the other clones at this point, which I suppose I don't see how he would have. But, you know, I realize, like, right, he still only know Cosima.
Right.
So Duncan comes in and Cosima's all like fangirl, you know, and she's saying, like, ooh, it's not every day you get to meet your maker. And he's like, oh, please don't call me that. And she's like, well, you don't get to every day you get to meet your Ethan, you know. And as she's, you know, just all bubbly about this, she starts to have a coughing fit and is bleeding. And then she's like falling down on the floor and having
a massive seizure.
Massive seizure. And it's horrible and scary and disturbing. And they have the voices of the other people in the room trying to figure out what to do. And poor Cosima. And we don't know what's happening. And we don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah. It was so, again, unexpected, mm-hmm, and heartbreaking to see. I mean, here, Delphine and her, they just said they loved each other, mm-hmm, and all of a sudden here's, and all I could think about was, thank goodness Ethan Duncan was here, because maybe, even though he's not like a doctor, mm-hmm, like maybe he can do something to help.
Yeah.
Please, oh please.
Yeah. I honestly don't remember what happens next. They switch then to the last scene of the episode, which back at Mrs. S's house, up in Kira's bedroom, and Kira and Sarah are asleep in the bed together, but Kira wakes up and she looks around and she reaches over to the nightstand and pulls open a drawer and pulls out her book from Dr. Duncan, his copy of The Island of Dr. Moreau. And she just takes it and sits down cross-legged at the foot of the bed, like she's going to read while her mom's still sleeping, and opens the book And we see all sorts of notes and diagrams and illustrations, like in the margins and on the cover page. And there's something more to this book than just the Island of Dr. Moreau.
Yeah, lots of something different, which also helps explain a little bit more of to why she was so interested in the book. Mm-hmm. Because on the one hand, like, yes, I'm sure. I mean, she's super smart. So the story and the plot, especially knowing that her mommy and it has clone sisters. Does she know that they're clones?
I don't know if she knows the fact of the cloning, but she knows they all look alike and that they're not
right,
like quadruplets or whatever.
And that she can tell them apart.
And she can tell them apart, right.
Yeah.
I don't know. Good question.
Yeah, but either way, she knows something's up. Something science-y is up, just based on everything, because mm-hmm. she's not stupid. And so the fact that she wants this book to look at it, like, just, it was really, I can't wait to see. I just adore Kira. Mm-hmm. She's so adorable and so flippin' smart. And yeah, mm-hmm. it's awesome. It's just great.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a nice ending for the episode. And it sort of pulls it all together.
And what a way to end, you know, because I figured I got ready to stop. Okay, so watching this on Amazon, mm-hmm. the what's coming next shows up right away.
Yeah.
And so in order to not get spoiled for the next episode, I always am like really ready to just shut the window mm-hmm. so that it's not. So I try and get as few hints as possible, as few, you know, what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And when Cosima is, you know, going through her seizures and all the blood and it's pulling away, I went and had my mouse ready to stop.
Mm-hmm.
And then this other scene comes in and I was just like, oh, I was not expecting that at all.
Yeah, because the Cosima scene really did feel like that's where you would end. You know, it was a cliffhanger, and it's still a cliffhanger, but they put this information about Kira and Dr. Duncan in there at the end that was very interesting.
Very, very interesting. I loved it. I mean, like we said before, this episode was bouncing around all over the place. Little bits of information here and there. But yeah, it was a good episode. It was a very good, solid middle of the season episode.
That's true. I mean, it's not my favorite episode because it does feel like, you know, it is kind of disjointed feeling, especially if you're taking notes and the idea of talking about it later.
Right.
It took more work
trying to jump back and
to
forth
to figure out, you know, a coherent way of discussing this episode. And you know, the Tony stuff like has funny stuff in it, but was not, it didn't pull any heartstrings, you know, either. And
yeah,
except for, like, you know, Felix and Sarah, you know, becoming closer because of it. So
right,
I would have liked to see more Allison and Donnie, and I think that will come in the next episode, but that even the little bit we had was really good.
I kind of like that it had that levity mm-hmm. Between the Tony bits and the bouncing around mm-hmm. because each of the other groupings were very, very emotional, very mm-hmm. character centric and pulling those heartstrings and stuff. You know, it kind of was a good balance.
Yeah.
It helped really balance out the whole episode as a whole, so you didn't come from it feeling really, really depressed.
Well, yes, again, we like this episode, and I think we need to get, we've only got two more episodes of this season, and they're both going to be big, I think, and, you know, and tearing it more than our heartstrings, you know, tear at our nerves and our ability to stop, you know, a lot has been set in motion now, and seeing how it all resolves or doesn't resolve is going to be that's going to be exciting and scary, I think.
Yes. Yes, for sure. So thank you so much for listening to this episode of SesterCast. We hope you enjoyed this episode and the episode that we watched. Let us know on Twitter what you think of the show. The show is at SesterCast. And Jean is at MacGenie, and I am at Mrs. Soup. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/pages/SesterCast, I believe is the link.
I think if you just search SesterCast.
Or just search for SesterCast, you can find us there. And we are, of course, a proud member of the Incomparable Network. So thank you for joining us, and we'll talk to you again later.